squad cars. The story you're about to hear is true. Details are supplied from the official case files by the South African police. Only names and places have been changed to protect innocent people involved.
Johannesburg, June the 17th, 10 a.m. The sky is dull and overcast, and there is a distinct possibility of rain. The temperature is low, even for this time of the year, and people are scurrying through the streets, keen to get into the brightly lit shops and out of the cold gusts of wind, which are blowing strongly. At the Johannesburg forts, Warder Bill Scott receives a telephone call from the prison governor, asking him to escort Jack Silver to the administrative block from the cells. A spell of corrective detention works wonders for some lawbreakers, but it hasn't done a thing for Silver. And Warder Scott has an uncanny feeling as he arrives at cell 47.
Okay, Silver, time to go in the big world again.
Yeah, thank goodness. I thought the day would never come.
We've been looking forward to it as well. You're not the only one who's pleased you're leaving.
Is that so? Well, you listen to me, you filthy screw. I'm going to remember the time I spent in here. I'm going to remember every damn second of it, and I don't forget things easy. Or faces.
All right, that's enough. Just behave yourself long enough to get outside. Come on.
Well, don't I get a lecture before I go? I thought we all got a lecture on the day we leave.
Not from me. He might from the governor. On the other hand, if he's got any sense, he'll save his breath.
You know me pretty well, don't you, Scott? You know when I say a thing, I mean it. Well, you hear this, there'll come a time when you're going to be sorry you ever laid eyes on me. I'm going to make you pay for the years of my life that have been wasted.
Those wasted years were your own fault, Silver. Nobody else's. If you commit a crime, you've got to be prepared to accept the consequences. And if you don't let go of my arm and stop talking like an imbecile this very minute, I'll see you spend a lot more time in here as well.
Oh, yes, you'd like it, wouldn't you? Well, it's not going to happen, Scott. I'm going out today, and you won't see me yet again. Ever.
Silver is hurried swiftly through the release procedure and steps out of the main prison gates into the cold and windy morning. Nobody welcomes his arrival, and nobody in the jail mourns his leaving. He walks slowly in the direction of the city center, savoring his freedom. He then seems to change his mind and heads along Smith Street, facing the oncoming stream of the one-way traffic until he reaches Bramfontein. He goes into a bar for a large brandy and then makes his way to Jan Smuts Avenue. He stands and watches the people driving past in smart, well-polished motor cars, all seeming to have somewhere to go and something to do. He spits savagely into the roadway, takes a deep breath, and sticks out his thumb in the traditional fashion of the hitchhiker.
Come on, you miserable scabs. Give a bloke a lift, can't you? It won't cost you anything. Unless you're all the same blooming squares. Now we'll see who's boss soon. And it won't be too long, neither. I'll show you. That's more like it.
Hello. Where do you want to go to?
How far are you going?
Oh, quite a way out, near the Lion Park, to be exact. Is that any good, too?
Yeah, that'll be all right.
Fine. Jump in, then. Filthy morning, isn't it?
Yeah, horrible. Cold. I'll be glad to get home.
Do you live out Brandenburg Way, then?
Yeah. Well, no, not yet.
Oh, does that mean you're going to?
Well, maybe I was thinking of buying a farm out that way.
Really? I thought land was rather expensive at the moment. Not that I mean...
I said I was getting a farm, mister. You're calling me a liar or something?
Oh, of course not. It's none of my business, anyway.
That's right. None of your business, so why don't you just keep your mouth closed and get on with the driving?
Now, look here. Who the devil do you think you're talking to? I don't have to take this sort of language from you. If you can't keep a civil tongue in your head, I shall set you down immediately.
Yeah, you do that if you want to. Well, it's easy for you, isn't it? I mean, you've got no money worries. We're not all as fortunate as you are.
I really don't see what that has to do with anything. Anybody can be polite, you know.
I suppose so. But you can't always speak my mind. It's got me into trouble before.
I'm not surprised. Do you work in Johannesburg?
Yeah. Yes, I'm a foreman there. In a garage. My present car's broken down. And that's why I thought I'd see if I could get a lift. You don't believe me, do you?
Of course I do. Why should you lie to me? My opinion means nothing to you.
No. No, that's right. I'm not very good at making conversation. I only like talking about things that really matter.
Yeah, that's all right. Please don't think that you have to talk. I'm quite happy to drive in silence.
It's okay with me. You give me a chance to think. Well, I've got a great deal to think about.
At the Johannesburg Forts, after a brief chat with the governor, Warder Scott decides to telephone an old friend at John Forster Square. The call is 90% social chats, but the other 10% is not.
Lieutenant Warwick.
Desk here, sir. I've got a Warder Scott from the fort on the line. He didn't know your new extension.
All right, pin through, please.
Yes, sir. Hello, George.
Hello, Bill. How are you keeping? Haven't seen you for ages.
You know what it's like. We must have a drink sometime.
Yes, as soon as you can make it. Bring Mary over to the house.
Yes, I will. We'd like that. I'll go to the phone room. They're always better at fixing up this sort of thing than we are.
Yes, too true. Anything we organize will be wrong for them.
Look, I've got to dash off now, but there's something I thought I might just mention. We had a particularly nasty piece of goods release this morning. Now, I've no real grounds for saying this, except my highly developed nose for trouble.
Yes, you can say that again. Okay, Bill, thanks for the tip. We'll keep our eyes open. Just give me the details, will you?
12:45 p.m. Silver and the man driving the car travel in silence until they move out into open country just past Randburg and arrive at the turnoff to the man's home.
Oh, sorry about having to drop you here, but you should get another lift soon. I'd shelter under those trees until you see someone coming if I were you.
But you're not, are you? You're all right, Jack. Typical of his sort, this is. Dropped me off here miles from anywhere. You could easily have taken me on a bit. At least to a garage or shopping center or something. Oh, well, if that's the way it is, every man for himself. Nobody gives you anything. You've just got to take.
12:55 p.m. There is not much traffic on the lonely road, and Silver gets tired of standing under the trees. He pulls his jacket out over his head for a little extra protection and starts to walk down the road, which runs through a valley with the ground rising fairly steeply on either side. On one side of the valley, there's a house where Mrs. Emily Johnson lives with her daughter, Susan. This is the first house that Silver sees, and he is drawn up the hillside towards it by the warmth of the yellow light coming from its windows, shining brightly in the gloom, and the little clouds of smoke rising gustily from the chimney stack.
Can I help you?
Good afternoon, lady. Well, actually, I was just calling to see if there are any jobs you wanted done. You know, anything around the house, electrical jobs, or perhaps a bit of painting and decorating, anything like that.
Well, I don't really know at the moment. Not without asking my daughter, and she's driven into town to do some shopping. But look, come inside for a few moments anyway. You must be freezing cold. Would you like a cup of soup? It's nice and hot.
Yeah, thanks. It'll warm me up a bit.
Just come through to this room here. There's usually a beautiful view, but it's so dark today, I've had to switch the lights on. Please, sit down.
Oh, I've changed my mind about the soup. You got any brandy?
Brandy? Oh, yeah. Well, we do keep a little in the house.
Oh, I'll have that. Be better for me. You don't mind, do you?
No, not at all. I'll get it for you.
It's a nice place you got. It's a bit lonely, isn't it? A little bit isolated?
It is rather quiet, but that's what we like about it. Would you like soda or water or...
No, nothing. Just as it is.
There you are.
Thanks. Well, that's better. You can't beat a drop of brandy, can you? It warms your guts. Must be worth quite a bit, eh? A place like this. Nice furniture, silver, ornaments. You're not hard up for a bit of cash, I can see that.
We do have a bit put by. In the bank, that is. We never keep any money around the house.
No. Isn't wise to do that these days. But nevertheless, it does have its advantages now and then. Can save an awful lot of trouble in an emergency.
Yes, I suppose it can.
It's a funny thing that people always say they don't keep money in a house. But most of them do.
Do they? Well, we never do. The banking service is so good these days that it really is much more convenient.
I don't like banks. All those forms and books, paperwork. Hard cash is best. You think so too, really, don't you?
Yes, it does have some advantages, I suppose.
Well, of course it does. And in any case, it's only natural that you deny keeping money in the house to a stranger, isn't it?
Maybe it is, but I can assure you that in my case, we don't...
I always like to have plenty of money. I find it makes me feel sort of secure, you know?
Yes, I suppose it does.
There's a nice view of the valley you get from here. Now, it looks pretty bleak at the moment, all those crags there. They look quite vicious. I always admire forceful things. An awful lot can be achieved by force. Sometimes it takes a lot, or sometimes just a little. Well, it all depends, doesn't it, lady?
p.m. In the lonely little house on the hillside, Silver continues to torment the old lady, who's becoming more and more nervous. He sits by the fireside drinking brandy and shows no sign of leaving.
Ah, that's very cozy. Very cozy indeed.
I think I'll just go out to the garage and get some more wood for the fire.
I'll get it.
Oh, no, it's all right. I can manage.
I said I'll get it. Oh. I'm stronger than you are. In the garage, you said?
Yes, at the bank. There's quite a large pile there.
That's okay, lady. It won't take me a minute. Through here, is it?
Yes. There's a door in the kitchen that leads outside.
Okay.
Oh, dear. I should never have let him in. Yes, I will. Hello? Oh, good. Is it possible to speak to Miss Susan Johnson? She had a hair appointment with you at 12 o'clock. Oh, she has. All right. Thank you very much. I must go now. Goodbye.
Here we are. Well, this should keep it going for a bit.
Why have you brought the rifle in here?
I found it in the kitchen. Getting dirty. Thought I might clean it a bit for you.
Oh, well, there's no need. It used to belong to my brother before he passed away. He used to hunt, you see.
Did he now? Well, I think I'll just clean it up anyway. There are your logs.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very kind of you.
It's not a bad old gun, this. There was a box of cartridges on the shelf as well. You shouldn't leave them lying around, you know. They could easily fall into the wrong hands.
Yes, I've been meaning to tidy up in there, but...
I brought a couple of them in, too. You see? Well, let's see if they fit, shall we? There we are. In you go, my little beauty. That's it. Fits like a glove. I love the feel of guns. They make me feel strong, confident, you know what I mean?
I've been thinking about the work you wanted to do, and there really isn't anything at the moment. So I don't want to waste your time any longer. Let me give you something for your trouble in any case.
I'll take that, lady. Well, let's see how much you keep in the settle. Is this all you got? Four on?
Yes. Yes, yes, it is. Please, take it. Take it and go away.
You make me sick. You're all the same. You live in your cozy little worlds. You won't lift a finger to help anybody who hasn't got money. Do you expect me to believe you only got four rand in the house?
It's true. It's true, honestly. It's all I've got here.
Now, you tell me where your money is or I'm going to break every piece of furniture in this place. Starting with this.
Oh, yes.
And then this. And this. Where is it? Where?
Please stop. There isn't any money, I promise you. Please don't break everything up.
Shut up!
Please. This is my home. We had to save all our lives to buy...
Shut up! Either you tell me now, or you'll see if this gun really works.
I can't. I haven't got any.
All right, lady. You asked for it. You should have told me, lady. You should have told me.
Silver proceeds to ransack the whole house in search of the money he is convinced is there, but finds nothing. He helps himself to some food from the refrigerator and drinks some more brandy. At 3:30 p.m., he decides to make some coffee and puts the kettle on the stove. But almost immediately, he hears a car moving up the steep incline to the house. He grabs the brandy bottle and runs out of the back door and up the hillside at the back of the house.
Mother, I'm back. Back. Sorry I was so long. All behind the hairdresser, so windy that... Mother.
Radio Police Headquarters, Brixton, Constable Werter is one of the men on duty answering emergency calls. He's had several matters to deal with already during the afternoon, but nothing like the hysterical voice that he now has to deal with.
Police Constable Werter speaking.
There's been a murder. A dreadful murder. You've got to come here quickly. I can't stand lying on the floor.
Please, madam, I must get the address before we can do anything.
I can't.
Where are you phoning from, madam?
Mm-hmm. The road that leads from the line past through the Huntsville Dam on the right about halfway up the hill. Please, you've got to come. We're about a mile down the road.
It's all right, madam. No, it's all right. Now, we'll send somebody over immediately. What name is it?
My name is Susan Johnson. My mother.
All right, madam. Put your receiver down. We'll be there in a few minutes. Goodbye.
3:50 p.m. Police Constables Williams and Henske in car 17 arrive at the Johnsons' house. Susan Johnson is still crying hysterically in her bedroom, and they can get very little sense out of her. Whilst Constable Henske tries to get some sort of coherent statement, Williams radios back to headquarters.
Car 17 to control. Car 17 to control. Come in, control. Over.
Control to 17, receive you. Come in, 17, over.
Calling from the Johnson house. Woman murdered by shooting in front room. Broken china and furniture all over the place. It looks very recent. Repeat, very recent. Blood still wet, body still warm. Over.
All right, 17. We'll send assistance immediately. Open it up.
I hope you don't mind us using your kitchen as an office, Miss Johnson. My men should be finished in the front room fairly soon. Then we can tidy the place up for you.
Thank you. Really, Lieutenant Warwick, do I have to talk to you now? I know you've got your jokes too, but...
Yes, I promise you, Miss Johnson, I wouldn't bother you now. It wasn't of the utmost importance. I realize what you must be going through, but the fact remains that speed is of the essence. The crime was obviously committed only a very short time ago. The sooner we find out exactly what happened, the more chance we have of catching the murderer.
Sorry. Yes, you must catch him. Apart from my mother, he's obviously a maniac. Very dangerous to anybody.
I'm afraid he is. Now, you're absolutely certain that you haven't moved or touched anything since you came in?
No, I haven't. I parked the car, came inside, saw the body lying on the floor. The The place was an absolute shambles. I've never seen anything like it before, Lieutenant.
Stay with the Henske. I'll be back in a moment. Hurry up with those photographs over there. Williams, just a minute, please.
Yes, sir.
You say Miss Johnson was lying on her bed when you arrived?
Yes, sir. She was hysterical, and I can't say I blame her. It was like a madhouse when he arrived. This mess in here, and the daughter screaming, and the place filled with steam, not to mention the fact
that... What do you mean, place filled with steam?
Well, the kettle was boiling, sir. Must have been boiling for some time, I should think.
Anybody used it since?
Oh, I don't think so, sir.
Okay, Williams, carry on. Oh, find out from the doctor how long ago it was, will you?
Yes, sir.
Miss Johnson, I know this may seem a silly question to you, but... You didn't put the kettle on at all when you got back, did you?
No, of course not. I phoned and then went straight to my room.
Thank you. There's one more thing. There isn't another road out of here, is there?
No.
Excuse me, sir.
Just a second, William. Well, thank you, Miss Johnson. I should go and lie down again now. I'll get our doctor to give you a sedative before he goes.
Thank you.
Yes, Williams?
The doctor says an hour and a half at the most, maybe less.
Ah, yes, well, that ties in. Now, listen, Williams... I think our man could still be very close to this house. When you arrived here, the kettle was boiling, but there was still plenty of water in it, so it wasn't boiling for too long. Now, either Mrs. Johnson put it on just before she was murdered, or the killer put it on, but was disturbed by Susan Johnson's arrival back here and had to leave in a hurry. In either event, the odds are that he left in a hurry anyway. If he didn't, why leave the kettle on? He could have hardly missed it. It's a gas stove.
Very noisy too, sir.
Now, if the killer was disturbed by her arriving back, then he could hardly have run past her down the drive.
Oh, which means he left on foot and out the back.
Yes, and he may still be up there.
4:05 p.m. Lieutenant Warwick radios headquarters and gets permission to throw a police cordon around the area, hoping to trap the murderer in the circle. By 4:20 p.m., over 60 men and 5 police dogs are converging in 15 cars and vans on the Johnson household.
Men and cars, as requested, are on their way. In addition, cars 12 and 29 are patrolling the main road. Over.
I'll take your control. Please inform me when men are in position. Over.
Silva is sitting huddled in the bushes on the slope well above the house. He's watching the police activity in the house, unaware of the net that is steadily closing around him from all sides. The brandy bottle is empty, and his senses are dull. When he finally becomes aware of the danger, it is too late.
Not long now. It'll be dark. And then you can just take a nice, quiet stroll along the... Dogs. Got a few of them. They must be looking for me. They've got to get out. Get further up the hill. I'll be okay then.
Here he goes! Get it up there!
That's all right, sir. The dog's after him.
No. Get away from me. Get away from me. Get away. All right, copper. All right, now. No more. No more. Call him off. Call him off.
Jack Silver was found guilty of murder and was sentenced to death.
They prowl the empty streets at night, waiting, in fast cars, on foot, living with crime and violence. These men are on duty 24 hours out of every 24. They face dangers at every turn, expecting nothing less. They protect the people of South Africa. These are the men of Squad Cars.
Listen again next Friday evening to another dramatic story in our authentic South African police series, Squad Cars. Squad Cars is directed by Colin Fish and produced by David Goodman.